And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, it's a beautiful day, Melody.
It is a beautiful day. It's a tad nippy, but beautiful. Sun finally came out here on the Eastern Shore and just didn't have enough time to warm up.
See,
but
snowflakes in Minneapolis. Yikes.
Yes. Yeah, we didn't get much. We're just in the, you know, low 50s for today. And so anyway, now that the world has had our weather report, let's give the world the report on precious metals. Gold today, nice day, up 1240 at 1746. Silver was up 54 cents at $25.42. Platinum was down 14 at 1162. Palladium was up 20, 2756. The USDX today was down 0.25 at 91.84. Crude oil was up 74 cents at 60.44. And the paper market, the S&P closed at a record. NASDAQ added 1%. Stocks kind of shook off the J&J, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine halt amid higher inflation. We're going to talk all about all of that. The Dow was down, though, 66 points at 33,678. The S&P was up 13.65 at 4,141. The NASDAQ was up 146 at 13,996. And I don't know, do you have an update on the 10-year yield, Dave?
Oh, my. Let's see. I left that page, but I am back on it. Bear with me as it refreshes. It looks like the 10-year yield is down about 0.56, so about 6 basis points at 1.62%. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Didn't have that. And there was one more thing I wanted to take a peek at and make a comment is it's hard to believe. Bitcoin, 63,000.
Oh my God. It's amazing.
Fine.
I mean, at what point do we rethink the strong position we've taken against it? Are we the outlier and not it? Just this insanity, you know, throws all caution to the wind, it seems.
Well, you know, I mean, it's just, I mean, when you look at, you know, the people that are going in there and you really look at what you can do with Bitcoin. And again, I talk about the dark web, the deep web, yeah, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, it's a great way to, and that's why the money is flowing there. I guess there's a lot of money to be laundered. I guess there's a lot of drug money involved. I guess there's a lot of, you know, pornography, you know, so, and it's another way to purchase the wealthy or kind of doing it from what I understand, Dave, is they can purchase things. And to me, it's a private way to purchase things and they don't have the, you know, the tax consequences and everything else.
Yeah.
So they can move millions of dollars.
Well, I've always thought, I mean, the more I learned about the criminal element aspect, you know, it just made me wonder, you know, are participants, are crypto investors really complicit in those kinds of activities? I mean, vast majority of cases, I'm sure, you know, not willingly or willfully, but, you know, I'm sure over the few years now that this mania has been growing, you know, I can't believe all of them are ignorant about some of these questionable uses of all this. I mean, the literal hundreds of billions of dollars, over a trillion now altogether. I don't know.
Yeah, there is a lot of, and again, whether you buy things off the internet and so forth and whatnot. I mean, what a virtual home for $500,000. I mean, it's just crazy. It's and when it gets into the craziness levels, that's usually when bubbles do break. And they can go a little bit further, but when it gets to these levels, now everybody wants to get in. And this is usually the last surge that, and it's just not Bitcoin, it's all the other little cryptos, doing it. Some of them have actually done better than Bitcoin. Pardon?
These NFTs. That's what
I was trying to think of.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy, too. We'll talk more about that at some point as we finish some research on that.
Yeah, that's a crazy deal. And again, big money. You know, you can move a lot of money privately, and it's a whole lot easier to do it with gold. You know, those NFTs, a lot of that's just not real.
Yeah.
It's not real. I don't get it. Anyway, what I do get is inflation. And, of course, inflation never goes away, not when we have a fiat dollar, not when we continue to print the amount of money that we have. And, especially, particularly if you want to go back to the early 70s when Nixon nixed the gold standard. And so inflation began. It's here. It's going to stay here, and it's not going to go away. It's not going to go away until they actually default on the debt, and if they actually do something to where D.C. becomes accountable. And I can't imagine that being anytime soon. And we saw consumer prices that rose last month by the most in more than 8.5 years. And today's report from the Labor Department also showed a firming in underlying prices last month, as strong demand bumps against supply constraints. Again, we got to remember this, too. It's just not about all pent-up demand and so forth. It's some, but the true inflation is a monetary situation.
Yeah.
So Mr. Powell and a couple of economists, actually view the higher inflation as temporary, and it's going to pass because they relate to the supply chains adapting and becoming a little more efficient.
It's so blasé.
Yes, absolutely. The consumer price index jumped 0.6 last month. That's the largest gain since August of 2012. Gasoline prices, that kind of soared, a little over 9%. That counted for nearly half of the increase, followed by a 6.4% increase in February. Food edged up 0.1%. Dave, I always said this for years and years and years and years and years. I want to shop where they shop. because I do think that 0.1% seems a little low. Don't you agree?
I do.
But in the 12 months leading up to the end of March, the CPI jumped 2.6%. That's according to the government. And that was the largest gain since August of 2018. And hey, if you exclude that volatile food and energy components, the CPI increased 0.3% after nudging up the 0.1% in February, Dave.
Oh, jeez.
Tell us about shadow stats.
Well, thank you. That's our friends at shadowstat.com. Their credible alternative measure of CPI, which uses estimating methods in effect in 1990, we believe reflecting much more effective methodologies show prices up slightly over 6% right now, not 2.6. Using 1980 methodologies, which are probably even more accurate, although admittedly cumbersome. Inflation's closer to, listen to this, 10%. And I mean, intuitively, my guess is, if you would ask in a poll of random consumers, I'm talking people who go to the grocery store, people who commute and have to get gas, you ask them, what do you think inflation is at right now? And I have a feeling, it'd certainly be somewhere between 6 and 10%, and not 2 or 3. But in any event, the largest gain in 7 months in the so-called, I think, bogus core CPI was driven by a rise in rents, surprisingly, higher motor vehicle insurance costs, surprising too, as well as more expensive recreation and household furnishings. Now, the Fed tracks the government's core personal consumption expenditures in price index, the PCE, for its 2% inflation target, now a flexible average. And the core PCE price index is hovering at a woeful 1.5%. The government reported last week that producer prices surged in March. That was in sync with several business surveys showing an acceleration in their cost pressures. Now, a lot of these businesses are attributing those pressures in large part to bottlenecks in the supply chain, which we've been talking about a lot on this program. And that comes amid worker absenteeism because of the pandemic. And that's left manufacturers struggling with, in some cases, acute shortages of basic materials, but also rising commodity prices and difficulties in transporting finished goods. Take a look at some of these major shipping ports. Now, these fractured supply chains, together with just about $6 trillion in government relief since the pandemic hit the U.S. last March, are seeing these price pressures. In addition, the Fed has slashed its benchmark overnight rate to near zero and pumping wacky money, into the economy through monthly bond purchases to the tune of $120 billion. But if there's one but, it's this ongoing labor market slack that could make it harder for companies to pass on higher production costs to consumers, as employment remains close to 10 million below its peak in February last year, Melody.
Well, we touched on this yesterday, and, again, it bears repeating. We talk about the deficit, how it surged to an all-time high of $1.7 trillion just for the first 6 months of this year, of the budget year. We know that it's nearly double the previous record, as we've seen another round of stimulus and relief checks added to those numbers, billions of dollars to the spending. In its monthly budget report, the Treasury Department said that the deficit for the first half of the budget year, and that is from October through March, was up from a shortfall of $743 billion. That really is incredible. I mean, really, that's almost a trillion. The deficit has been driven higher, again, by the dollars, trillions of dollars in support that Congress has passed. We all know about the $1.9 trillion that went through last month. These numbers, and I think they're beginning to get, maybe they're not beginning to get politicians' attention yet to where they actually want to talk about it. But I believe the people that have money, people that have you know, retirement accounts and so forth, I think they're beginning to pay attention, especially now that we have this infrastructure spending and all the pork that's in these things, and it's really not going to our infrastructure, just like the 1.9. A lot of it did not go to, you know, for relief to the people. So, Dave, it's, you know, the best thing that government had hoped for was lower rates because it helps them, too, and because they don't have to pay as much in interest.
Yeah. Yeah, the interest on the public debt, still $229 billion the first 6 months of the current year, although that's $41 billion below the same period a year ago, again, reflecting the lower interest rates. But I just wonder, and perhaps I need to, maybe this needs to be the next topic at our at our otherwise rather upbeat family holiday meal with my children, who I guess, you know, when the time comes, they're gonna look back. They're gonna see all this, these trillions of dollars of debt that's now on their dime. And then, of course, their children, when it could be double what it is today. And I'm not sure who they're going to be more mad at, Melody. If they're going to be mad at themselves for having not informed themselves at an earlier age, or become more politically active or vocal at a younger age. Or if they're just going to shake their heads at us, at our generation, and just say, what have you wrought? What have you left us? You know, Maya McGuinness, who's president of the Bipartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, warned, we need to start paying for what we spend. We need a plan to bring down the debt. The question I have, Melody, is anybody listening, or is what we're hearing out there just a whole bunch of policymaker yawns?
That's what it is. I mean, it's all fine and dandy to say that we need a plan to bring down the debt. Well, what's the plan? Give us a plan. There is no plan. The only plan that we have right now is going into a break. So we'll be right back, and we'll finish up with that topic when we come back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. Heading into the break, we were just wrapping up about the deficit and with Maya McGuinness, president of the Bipartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, had warned, we need to start paying for what we spend, and we need a plan to bring it down. And, of course, we're talking about what plan. There is no plan that you can create that's going to pay down the debt. You can start paying for what we spend. But D.C. is not going to go through all those budget cuts. There's no way. I mean, even President Trump attempted it several times. There were, you know, if you spend this, you have to cut this and this and that. Look what happened. I don't think anything was ever enforced. I don't think anybody ever paid attention to it. So, again, what do you do? The only thing that they could do is continue to print money and then default. It's the only thing they'll be able to do. And the children, Dave, you're right, the children, you know, they'll pay for it. Where they'll pay is they won't get the inheritances. I mean, you have in retirement accounts, you have what? $21, $22 trillion or more. That all gets wiped out. So they're not going to have much coming from their parents to help them out at that point in time, unless their parents have gold and silver. But anyway, talking about the, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No.
China's dominance as a trading power, both their exports and imports, they surged from low levels a year earlier, and exporters continued their recent record performance, selling $241 billion worth of goods overseas last month. That's according to government figures. $710 billion in exports in the first quarter was China's second highest total ever, just shy of the record in the final 3 months of last year. Chinese factories are among the top beneficiaries of soaring global demand for medical goods, work-from-home equipment, other home merchandise that travel-starved consumers have been buying through the past year. Total shipments abroad jumped almost 31% in March from a year earlier, with broad double-digit gains across major trading partners, including a 53% surge to the U.S. and a 46% increase to the European Union. So, Dave, how bad are the people hurting here in this country? Is that all stimulus?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we see, I mean, well, my guess is the answer to your question is yes. A good part of it is probably stimulus. Although we're getting mixed messaging on that, you know, as well as so many other metrics. But it does make you scratch your head because, I mean, who else is buying these products? I mean, certainly they've got a big, a lot of attention from Europeans and even other South Asians, but both of those areas are in worse shape than we are here. So That's a good question. Where's it all coming from? I mean, there's one guy, David, I'm not sure how to pronounce this name, David Q of Bloomberg Economics, said there are reasons to question whether such a strength of overseas demand will be sustainable. He says in a report that revealing emerging weakness in what's been a mainstay during the crisis, exports of stay-at-home related products, pointing out that sales abroad of those items weakened compared with the fourth quarter. But also rising factory prices in China also likely played a part in boosting the value of exports. Now, we'll learn this Friday. It'll be interesting what you and Butch are able to report on Friday's program, because the consensus of economists think that China will have expanded over 18% in the first quarter from a year ago. That will be interesting, and to see what the impact of that is on American politics, not to mention, you know, economics.
Wow. Well, you know, we talked a little bit about this part of what Jerome Powell, he was on 60 Minutes on Sunday, and, you know, he asserted complete ignorance of the amount of margin debt being used to inflate the stock market to one new historic high after another. CBS's Pelley told Powell, securities industry has reported that $814 billion has been borrowed by people investing in the stock market, borrowed against their portfolios. That's a 49% increase over last year. He then asked him, at what point does the Federal Reserve start to rein in this speculative bidding up of stock prices based on borrowed money? Mm-hmm. Powell, he said, that sounds like margin debt. Mm-hmm. I don't know that statistic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. He also said, I'd say the main thing that we do is make sure that the financial institutions that we regulate and supervise understand the risks that they're running. I know. I know, Dave.
Uh-oh. Oh, boy.
Really?
Oof.
Today, the Fed supervises.
Sorry, that's the floor falling out from underneath the Fed chair.
Oh, I know it. I would say the main thing that we do, this is Powell speaking again, is we make sure that the financial institutions that we regulate and supervise understand the risks. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
He actually is saying these things?
Well, he can be, because people don't know any better.
Yeah. And they feel like, oh, well, they have it under control. And, of course, you know, the Fed supervises some of the most highly leveraged financial institutions in the world, the Fed. And chief among them are Wall Street banks that are fueling not only their own internal leverage, but they're also fueling these obscene levels of leverage by loaning out hundreds of billions of dollars to hedge funds. Pam and Russ Martins of Wall Street on Parade say for Powell to claim ignorance of one of the most important statistics used to monitor excess leverage in the financial system, it is an insult to the American people, Dave.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Now, one good reason that Powell may have wanted to dodge the issue of margin debt, is that he knows quite well from his days as a Wall Street insider that the $814 billion figure cited by Pelley is just the tip of the iceberg. The $814 billion margin debt is the latest amount reported by Wall Street self-regulator FINRA the end of February. And that figure, the 814, is 49% higher than the $545 billion reported a year earlier. But as Powell well knows, and the public is just learning through, you know, the recent implosion of the Archegos Capital Management hedge fund, Wall Street's largest banks aren't actually reporting all margin debt that's fueling the sharp rise in stock prices, mainly because they don't have to. Now, FINRA doesn't supervise Wall Street banks that are also engaging in highly leveraged trading. It supervises just the broker-dealers owned by those bank holding companies. For example, according to the most recent report from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, Goldman Sachs Bank USA has $271.6 billion in assets versus a face amount of derivatives in the amount of $42.2 trillion. I mean, the swap arrangements that the banks had with Archegos gave it full discretion on what stocks it wanted to buy and sell, making that structure sound like a dodge of the rules on transparency and risk. This swap structure has not only enabled the amount of margin debt in the system as a whole to be dramatically underreported, it's also allowed hedge funds like Archegos to obtain much higher initial margin debt than is allowed under Fed rules that set the initial margin at 50% of the stock's purchase price, not the 6-to-1 margin that was provided by the banks to Archegos. This is crazy, Melody. This is insanity. I mean, it sounds like it's worse than it was during the Great Recession.
It is worse. It is.
So,
because where we got here today was all the money that was being created and all the new programs that were created to pull us out of that recession. And they're using those same programs. And the Fed, they have to allow it or it'll collapse.
Yeah, geez.
And that's
process seems so corrupted.
It is.
And the revolving door of, you know, who regulates and then who returns, who comes from and then returns to the industry is astounding.
I mean, when you mention like the SEC and you mention these and, oh, the Fed is regulating, it doesn't mean anything. There is no accountability anywhere. Look at Archegos. You know?
I want to go back to college. You know, if I were a freshman political science student now, with just a little bit of the knowledge I've obtained over the years, what a total difference. I'm afraid I'd go into it so warped. I don't know.
I mean, it is. I mean, the corruption, and it's just not here. I mean, the amount of money, it's astounding.
Yeah, I started college right soon after Watergate. And probably one of the big impetuses, if you will, for my choice of study back then, for better or for worse. But boy, fast forward however many years, I mean, four decades, and I'm not sure we've learned anything. I'm just afraid that what we've learned, we're using to further corrupt the system and enrich our pockets. And boy, how, you know, I'm just afraid when the regulators continue to walk through the revolving door. I mean, we've been asking for it for a long time. And when it blows up, I mean, we have as much ourselves to blame as, you know, those who are doing it to us. No,
our blame is allowing the politicians and allowing, you know, to allow this to go on. This should not have, but they should have never took us off the gold standard. It all goes back. It really does all go back to the beginning, because that's how we got here today. I mean, this has been a fraud, and frauds do, you know, I had a conversation. Greg Hunter will be on the program next week, and we had a conversation. We were talking about the degree of fraud, and he made a good point. He says frauds can go on for decades, but when they come to an end, it comes quick. You're not prepared for it. And, you know, you wake up one day to a whole different world. So I guess you can say enjoy the fraud while you can. Because Jeez. All frauds do come to an end. And you can't look at this in any different manner than it being criminal fraud is what they're doing. And it will come to an end. And I believe that because, you know, it's but there isn't anything. It says, Dave, is there anything honest that actually goes on? Not much. Not much. So anyway, so the advertising industry has poised for big gains. You know, we have the industry, that industry that was plagued. Every industry was plagued last year by the pandemic. And they're poised to return stronger than ever in 2021. In a recession, marketing budgets are typically among the first expense cut from a company's budget. But because the government injected so much stimulus in the economy, initial fears of a prolonged consumer spending slump, well, we've been talking about it, seem to have subsided a little bit. The in this industry, in the U.S., Group M forecasts that the industry will grow by 15% this year, better than its prior 12% forecast. Wiser predicts that the U.S. should end the year with a 6% more activity than we saw the last normal year of 2019. And globally, Magna, which is another advertising agency, is predicting the global ad market will increase by 6.4% this year. So I guess beyond the general economic recovery, some analysts are optimistic that in-person activities like sporting events, live entertainment, and travel will kind of return a little faster than expected. The Summer Olympics, for example, is expected to drive about $800 million of incremental revenue this year. They also expect the strongest ad spend growth rates will come from the travel, automotive, beverages, and movie categories. So, you know, for certain industries like the automotive sector, Wiser notes that recovery could be a bit slower. And thanks to the reliance on foreign supply chains that are linked to the countries that may not recover as quickly. I hear the music. We'll be right back. It's time for this short break. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And let's see. I guess some people by now have reached or have received their bonus stimulus payments from the last bailout from the government. And the so-called plus-up payments, I guess, I haven't heard this as a surprise for people who have already received stimulus money. So some recipients, they're actually eligible for more money after their 2020 tax returns have been processed. According to the IRS, you could get a plus up payment if you had a decline in income in 2020 compared to 2019, or if you added a new dependent. Meanwhile, millions of others are still waiting for their latest stimulus check. I guess it's an important thing to remember. It's that not all the payments went out at the same time last month, Dave.
Well, we're reading the Treasury Department says that the $1,400 payments for Social Security and other federal beneficiaries who don't normally file tax returns, they were sent out this past weekend. So I guess they're lumping all of them into this this bonus plus up, as they're calling them. The majority of those payments apparently were sent electronically. It should have been received by April 7th. What was that? Last week. And all checks are expected to be delivered by mid-April. They're saying if you don't get a check by then, you may want to look into filing a tax return, even if you aren't required to.
Well, again, we talk about technology and robots taking a lot of human jobs. And Domino's Pizza announced that it's going to be delivering those pizzas with the help of driverless robot cars. And this is a pilot. This is part of a pilot in Houston that is actually starting this week. The largest pizza chain in the U.S. is partnering with Nuro, a self-driving delivery company that has raised more than $1 billion from investors and that received regulatory approval last year to begin unmanned deliveries. Now, they announced their partnership in 2019, but the pilot for the service launches this week. Nuro also launched a pilot in Houston with CVS last year to deliver prescriptions to consumers. And they've also been working with Walmart and Kroger as well. Collaboration with Domino's comes amid a severe shortage of drivers available for food delivery, and consumers who are part of the pilot, which is being run out of the Woodland Heights Domino's, can track the van's route via text alerts. They prepay for the delivery online, and once the van's received, they use a PIN code to retrieve their order from the vans, which are smaller than a regular vehicle. The ceiling doors open upwards, and the pie is presented to the customer. Well, now you have to walk out to the car?
I know, right?
Oh, well, I'll never use Domino's.
And what happens if you don't tip them?
I know.
Is the robot going to have like a plastic water gun? They're going to spritz you with water?
I don't know.
Or my pizza goodness. Sauce, worse.
Yes, my goodness. So, so anyway, that's weird that the ceiling doors open upwards and then the pie is given to you or presented to you and you can take it. The program will allow us to, for them to better understand how customers respond to the deliveries, how they interact with the robot, and how it affects store operations. Apparently, no word on whether Domino's will measure how this affects its human employees' morale. And, yeah, what about pizza dough making robots, Dave?
Are they next?
Maybe.
That's
maybe.
What I'd be worried about. I mean, here it comes. I mean, we've been talking about it, too, for a couple of years now. And we'll talk a little bit more about this later in the program. I mean, the future is now, it looks like. Here, one of the part of the article that got me is that their partner, Neuro, indicated that Houston's roadways create challenging scenarios for our technology to work with. With Houston, which is America's fourth largest city, has one of the country's highest road fatality rates. So that's a pretty reassuring assessment, Melody.
Wow. Well, you know, Russia, I think we talked a little bit about this yesterday. Russia calls the U.S. an adversary today and told U.S. warships to stay away, well away from Crimea for their own good, calling for their deployment in the Black Sea, a provocation designed to test Russian nerves. And I think in this week's newsletter, Pat Buchanan wrote a nice article about this. And he always leaves the end of the article with a question about where are we headed with this. And it was his article was about the Russians of the Crimea, the movement of their troops. And it's another hot spot in the world, Dave.
It sure is. And, you know, it's creating a new war of words. You know, I mean, we've been private, really going through diplomatic channels for the last couple of months during the transition of the administrations, the complaining about Russia's buildup of forces near Ukraine's eastern border and in Crimea. Now NATO's calling publicly, as well as some of our officials, for Moscow to stop it. And Russia, you know, this is like a tit for tat, how the Chinese trade war began a couple of years ago. Russia says, we'll move our forces around as we see fit. And, you know, they in turn accuse NATO of destabilizing Europe by moving its military forces closer to Russia's border, although, you know, they're generally several hundred miles away. Looks like the short run, it's gonna raise the level of diplomacy required to make sure that you know, this doesn't go off the deep end. I'm not sure how either side can control that from happening, particularly us controlling Putin. You know, if he wants to test the Biden administration and their resolve. And again, you know, we know that there's so many dozens, if not hundreds, of missiles, nuclear and non-nuclear, pointed at each other's, from Russia into Eastern Europe, from Eastern Europe into Russia. So once again, Melody, you know, the more things change over the years, the more they remain the same.
You know, and then we have, yeah, I know. And then, you know, the same thing with Taiwan.
Oh,
warning coming from China to immediately stop any form of U.S.-Taiwan official contacts, not to send wrong signals to Taiwan independence forces so as not to damage peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. We've seen Washington has watched with alarm the uptick in tensions. And Blinken, the Secretary of State, said the U.S. was concerned about China's aggressive actions against Taiwan. So it's Russia, it's there, it's everywhere.
Yep, indeed.
And I guess this was just announced today where supposedly all Biden is going to withdraw all American troops from Afghanistan by September. missing a crucial May 1 deadline that was previously brokered by the Trump administration. Biden's removal of U.S. forces will coincide with the 20th anniversary of the September 11, 2001. It's all political. You know, I think when the last administration was going to pull troops, all the troops out of Afghanistan, didn't they get a lot of heat?
They did.
Yeah, so it's okay now?
They did. It was, yeah, there were warnings that complete withdrawal would leave Afghanistan as the Iraqis were left when we drew down from there. Of course, there are still some troops in Iraq, as obviously there are still in Syria, although at much lower levels than there were in the past. But this is a double-edged sword. You know, I don't care what your party is, what your politics are, and who you support. I would not want to be president. I mean, I guess it's easier to say, well, perhaps we shouldn't have been there in the first place. But I mean, 20 years later, it's a little hard to say that. And with each passing day, much less, you know, year, it doesn't get any easier. And the problem is Afghanistan, I mean, we should have learned our lesson from Russia, from the Soviet Union venture there decades ago. But of course, we didn't. And however well-intentioned and, you know, the moral imperatives there were after 9/11, you know, it's just we've learned that the Taliban, as a rule, are wicked men who live in the Middle Ages, who see women as property, who probably always will. And, you know, if you're looking to undo that or to mitigate that, much less build democracy.
You can't. It won't.
I don't know how you do that without, you know, I don't even know 100,000 or 500,000 troops would do that. It's another world and another time. I guess I just throw my hands up and say, well, whatever the decision is, you know, let's hope it doesn't become another breeding ground for Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
Well, you know, we should never have been there. And, you know, I believe, my memory serves me properly, they had, there's a lot of drugs that come out of there, the poppies. They had their crops. They had their crops down to almost zero until we got there. And now they're basically having record crops. I believe some of our troops even protect some of those fields. And it's just, you know, it's just no good. We need to protect this nation. We can't even protect our borders. We shouldn't be running around everywhere else with something that we can't change. And sometimes you need those types of leaders over there to keep some stability. And it's, you know, it's, I don't know. You know, I don't have the answers, but except we really should withdraw our troops and go from there. And it's
1.6 trillion since September 11th.
What's that?
That's how much the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria have cost us.
Yeah.
And I would guess that that's a minimum. I would guess there's a lot more than that that has fallen off the budget line items.
It's really not our business to go and change regimes. And, you know, perhaps we should start getting away from that. But we won't. And you know, here's Iran, you know, they're looking to start enriching their uranium to 60% purity. It's another move that would take a, you know, closer to, for nuclear weapons. So again, that is never going to go away. You know, so we never got to the article, which is where we were heading. We're going to go through those articles quick, but they took a little bit longer. About 1 + 1 does not equal 2, Dave.
Well, it's true. And if you haven't opened up your email from yesterday, I'll say it's a probably an article worth reading, although it's the same topic, similar theme that Melody and I and Butch have been talking about for months on this program. It talks about, you know, mismatch of expectations between workers and employers. That's become a standoff, and just really the mixed messaging that we're seeing, particularly about the economy, to a pandemic to a certain extent, but mainly the economy and all the noise that makes it so hard for everyday investors, like many of our listeners, to make quality informed decisions. So check it out, dgscoins.com, or check out your email.
Thank you, Dave. We'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me